This is the Grillion Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grillion Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grillion Bunker, welcome to your weekly one-stop shop for the strange, the unusual, and the esoteric. I'm your host, Micah Hanks, and you have locked in to the one and only Grillion Report. I can guarantee you there's nothing quite like this anyplace else out there on the web. Glad to have you joining us, as always. I'm your happy host, the mouth of the South, Micah Hanks. I write books sometimes and host podcasts. Across from me, our producer extraordinaire, should-be Flowers, the Dark Cardinal himself. The man who invented pillworms in 1877 after he traveled back to the past so that he could be famous for something in the present. Mr. Tyler Pittman, how are you this evening?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Always glad to have you here. Ladies and gentlemen, Caleb Hanks also in the bunker. Caleb Hanks, how are you this evening?
Pretty good. How are you doing?
You're doing well. I'm doing really good. Sorry, do that one more time.
I'm doing well. How are you?
There he is. Excellent.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, I always like the sound of hearing Caleb Hanks in the studio with us. Caleb. Man, you've got a little bit of a tan. Where you been, buddy?
Been right here in the bunker.
What?
Been right here in the bunker, man. What are you talking about?
No, I mean, like, you know, where have you been? You've taken a hiatus, and you've got a suntan. You look like you've been, like, in Tahiti or something.
Yeah, you look like Robert Bivol.
Where have you been?
Guys, I was here just Sunday, remember? I was here in the bunker.
I think we're experiencing some sort of a paradoxical space-time effluvious something.
Yeah, it's like a time slip.
Do I really look like Julio Iglesias, though?
Yeah, you do, man. Your hair's a little different, too. Are you feeling okay, Caleb?
Yeah, I feel fine.
Well, either way, good to see you here, by the way. And I see the folks in the chat room are just lighting up. Look at this. Yes, that's right. Always good when a Grailian comes back, just like the cat that walked away and came back the very next day. Or, as Caleb seems to think, maybe he never left at all. I think this is a lead-in to the next season of Grey Street. We're experiencing some sort of a temporal flux in the bunker tonight.
Still don't really know what you guys are talking about, but if I really do have a tan, that's weird. I haven't looked in the mirror much. Maybe that's why my hair is different.
You know, you have a great-sounding mic tonight. I have to actually say that really sounds good.
Yeah.
Here on... Can I say NPR on our podcast?
No.
Is that against? I can't say those three letters together.
Yeah, you can.
God.
Just say PRN. No, don't say that. That's another network. In fact, I think they carry us.
NPR.
Red Pill Junkie in the chat room. Yes, you are hearing the one and only Caleb Hanks. That's right. A little Thanksgiving surprise for our listeners, the guys that we love so much. You know, it's the season for coming together with family, and of course, well, Caleb never went anywhere at all, right?
No, I didn't.
Weird.
I'm telling you, I really do think that there's some sort of a temporal flux going on here in the bunker tonight, but I don't think it's just going on in the bunker. In fact, we've got some listener emails. I'm going to get right to them because this first one really blew my mind, and I think it's going to blow yours just as well. Billy writes, Micah, I wanted to report some possible strangeness. I have a normal wristwatch, not a digital. It's a good quality Fossil that I've had for about 11 months now. But on two occasions, and only on two occasions, I've woken up in the morning to find that this watch is exactly half an hour behind the correct time. On all other occasions, this watch has kept absolutely perfect normal time. Now, it seems very weird to me that this would happen both times while I was asleep, months apart with no other problems. Now, both times, exactly half an hour. And I should point out that the watch has not stopped at any point other than that. It is exactly half an hour behind the correct time, and when I discovered it, I monitored it, and it ran perfectly after I reset it for the next few hours, just half an hour behind until I corrected it, so it wasn't continually losing time. Now, surely if this was a battery issue, it would run slow all the time, wouldn't it? Why only twice? And why only when I've been asleep? And why exactly half an hour on both occasions? It was so weird. Now, I live alone. I was wearing the watch in bed both times, and no one else could have tampered it, possibly. You can't accidentally alter the time, and I can't imagine I'm doing this in my sleep. It's far too fiddly. So am I being abducted, or do I have a dodgy watch? Have you ever heard of anything like this on the paranormal grapevine? It's very puzzling. Thanks, and cosmic love, Billy. Well, I have to say, I've never heard quite of anything like that. But I will tell you this, that is very strange because on two instances, and Billy and I actually, we had a follow-up correspondence where he did tell me that he had been wearing the watch while he was asleep in both instances. And there were a few other little strange out-of-place things that he noticed just as well. But he said that the second, the most recent time that it happened, he woke up fully aware of where he'd been, what he'd been doing the night before, and that, sure enough, he was amazed because the first time, of course, it could have just been a fluke maybe or an accident. But when it happened again, he says, I'm sure that there's no way I could have done this in my sleep or that anyone else could have come in and done this. How strange. Has anyone in the listening audience ever experienced this? Strange little instances of apparent temporal flux. Now, I don't know if that's really what happened, but it is interesting when we hear someone talking about something like that. Very, very odd indeed. James writes, Micah, in your last show, you were right that the dilution of the radiation does not affect the decay rate, but it does reduce the radiation dosage that can have an effect on any one organism. Tyler and I, of course, have been talking about whether radiation was affected by salt water, but now James points out also that it can only in this instance. Decay rate does vary slightly based on some things. Dilution isn't one of them, but dilution can reduce the amount of radiation dosage that can affect any one organism. As we had talked about on the program, the actual half-life of a radioactive isotope isn't diminished by salt water, but
yes,
but the amount of radiation can be dispersed throughout the ocean. So it's always good when we get a little technical perspective. Now get this, James sent us a number of interesting information pertaining to environmental things that can affect radiation. One was from Physics Letters A, Volume 184, Issues 2 and 3, published in January of 1994. There was an article titled Reduced Radioactivity of Tritium in Small Titanium Particles. It was written by Mr. Otto Reifenschweiler, who stated that by heating a preparation consisting of an extremely small monocrystalline particle, a decrease of radioactivity by about 40% actually was observed. Pretty interesting.
Now, that is interesting.
Yeah.
A monocrystalline particle.
Yeah, there's a lot more technicality behind that. I'm watering that down, no pun intended. But now it is true, he notes, that a certain concentration of nuclear material affects its ability to sustain a nuclear reaction. The decay rate, yet again, however, is not affected. That's interesting. Alice wrote in about the nuclear component just as well. She said, off the top of my head, I can think of three nuclear reactor incidents. Three Mile Island, Chernobyl, and, of course, Fukushima, which we talked about last week.
Yes.
There could be more, but if something happens every decade, more or less, is that still rare and an anomaly? I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily call it anomalous. I would call it a series of accidents, unfortunate occurrences.
Sure, and I think what I was referring to at that time was it was anomalous in the fact that a natural disaster led to this nuclear event, whereas Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, I think it was failure to communicate.
Who knows? Tyler, by the way, speaking of Tyler, I think we've got another temporal flux issue going on here, and here's what I mean by that. Listen to this. We actually got an email from another Tyler.
Mm.
And Tyler writes, Tyler, watch out, talking to the other Tyler, because Tyler here is mmming you.
Tyler, it's you from the future.
How interesting.
Don't forget to wind your watch.
That's right. Don't forget to wind your watch. Look what happened to Billy over there in Germany.
Well, I got myself a Casio Digital.
I love this, by the way. The computers have been going nuts in the bunker all day. I think my computer actually just, no, it didn't completely. Yeah, it actually just did, yeah. I love it when my computer just dies while I'm trying to do a broadcast. One of them. We've got three broadcast computers here. Hopefully the stream's still live. Anywho. Tyler writes, Dear Grayley and crew, I would like to share an odd experience that happens to me from time to time. Now, every now and then, my state of consciousness becomes more aware. I've heard people talk about things that happen that cause this. Every thought and every action seems to be enhanced. It's really hard to explain unless you've actually had this happen. It seems to know every possible action that will happen. It's almost like I can seek the not-so-distant future. Along with these, what you might call predictions, everything feels so real. The only thing I can compare it to is these cases of people who encounter extraterrestrial beings and describe what they might call a super-reality. The same sort of thing happens. Again, it's extremely difficult to explain in words. I'm curious if any of your listeners report having had anything similar happen. I'll end this email with a compliment also, Tyler says. I've got to say I love your show, and I can't stop loving you. Stay awesome, your friend, Tyler. Well, thank you for that, Tyler, because it seems that elsewhere in the Graylian universe, well, for instance, my computer right here keeps telling me, you know, this is a virus, guys. It is. I just figured it out. It's a virus on this computer. Look, Norton. Norton. It's a virus called Norton.
Oh, my God. Scott Norton's in the bunker?
No, no, no. No, but I tell you, though, honestly, like, seriously, I don't have Norton installed on this computer. In fact, I went with WebRoot specifically so that I could avoid Norton, and it's literally stopped loading the page to tell me that Norton has crashed. The problem is, yet again, we have another temporal anomaly here. I never put Norton on this computer! Funny how that goes, isn't it? Tyler, thank you for the compliment, but as I was saying, apparently not everyone is so complimentary. Maureen Ellsbury, my dear friend, she just wrote to tell me, oh, this provided a good laugh today. Someone is searching. Now, let me give a little backstory here behind what she's talking about. Every now and then, Maureen and I have corresponded about some of the ridiculous things that come up in search results at the website of our good friend or friends Open Minds, the UFO people out in Arizona. And Maureen has shared some of the funny terms that come up from time to time, and we have a giggle. And she wrote to tell me that today someone was searching for the keyword Micah Hanks Pompous and somehow ended up on my personal page. Maureen's, that is. She said, I thought you would be amused by that. I'm not sure exactly why I'm ranking for that term. Must be combining a spacing out post with another post about something else. Ha ha. So when people go looking for Maureen Ellsbury, they type in Micah Hanks's Pompous. Would you disagree, Tyler?
No comment.
Well, at least Tyler loves me. Wait. Which Tyler?
I don't want to get fired.
Yeah, your wife.
I think the guy that was dedicating a Phil Collins song to you said, I can't stop loving you.
Yeah, that's right. No, wasn't that also that was also a Van Halen song, right?
It was.
Yeah.
Best of both worlds there.
That was a really good one there. Yeah. So, well, you know, it's funny because we were looking at some of the iTunes feedback on Graylian Report's iTunes page, and I noticed that there are, you know, they're, of course, in the extreme minority, but there are some negative feedback ratings that have been included on our iTunes page. But when I was looking at them, I noticed something funny. There is not a single negative review of me on iTunes that does not mention something about me being Southern, a good old boy, Southern drawl. Do you think that some of these people out here actually have something against Southerners? Is that what it's really about?
This good old boy thinks Seriously. He has the ability to talk about things he clearly doesn't because he's stationed in the deep South.
Somebody,
the racist rat's nest of the South. 2 stars. I won't be listening again anytime soon.
Well, seriously, I've always wondered why someone takes the time to write a negative review and then put 2 stars to say, well, you know, this guy's too Southern for me. The Southern drawl is too much. Micah Hanks plays up the good old boy thing. I'm like, how do you... I can't play it up. I can't turn it off.
How's that Micah Hanks know how to do all that podcast magic if he's actually from the South?
That's the other thing somebody had complained about in one of their reviews. They said, Micah Hanks' podcast sounds as though he's hosting a radio show.
It can't sound anything like radio if it's downloaded later.
Wow. Very astute observation. Folks, if you're the listening audience, we always participate or appreciate your participation. And we've got a fine roster of people in the chat room here tonight. And greetings to Justin, Kyle Phillison of Expanded Perspectives, New V, Red Pill Junkie, Starships, Wordlock, all the other fine folks who tune in and join us in the chat room. Too many to name, really. But I also want to put it out to you folks out there that if you'd like to send along a little feedback, we encourage you to, and whether you like it or dislike it, I like, in fairness, just to ask you to send along feedback. Good feedback is always appreciated, but, you know, hopefully people won't leave negative feedback just because they seem to have something against Southerners. When we come back from the break, we're going to be, actually, you know, I wonder how much time we're going to have for news coming back from the break, because we're going to have a couple more special guests on the program tonight. I haven't even officially announced who, but those of you who follow the Twitterverse may already have a little information about this. When we come back, we'll be jiving with a couple of our friends and co-hosts. We'll have to see what they think about podcast versus radio when we get them here on the program. It is the Graylian Report. I am the mouth of the South, the Southern man, Micah Hanks. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the program, to our friends, Space Mammies and Cosmic Brothers across the universe, and of course, all of you out there in Gradioland. It is the Graylian Report, your weekly one-stop shop for the strange and the unusual. A moderate perspective on all things strange, brought to you in real time every Tuesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern. I'm Micah Hanks, your host. Glad to have you with us as always. Your Southern host, by the way, proud of his Southern heritage. It's funny, something that other people have brought up to me a few times in the past is the fact that that although we were raised in the same household, Caleb and I have very different sounding accents. Caleb doesn't sound as Southern as I do, apparently. Caleb, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I sound Southern at all.
I wonder. Yeah, I don't really either. That's the funny thing. You know, it's, I don't know. Well, it could be environmental. I don't know. Maybe. For instance, it could have something to do with gases in the environment. Have you heard this one, Tyler? Apparently the Register carried this story. Yeah, you can, this one, Tyler. You're going to love this.
Really?
Yes, you will, because it has to do with cow flatulence. Apparently, a new study alludes to the fact that gas emissions produced by cow farts may be far worse than once believed to be.
Far worse.
Tyler, for shame.
You smelt it, dealt it.
A new study has revealed that the amount of methane, a greenhouse gas 20 times more potent but far less prevalent than CO2, released into the U.S. atmosphere is significantly higher than previously thought. We find greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture and fossil fuel extraction, and processing are likely a factor of two or greater than cited in existing studies. Now, this was reported in a paper describing the findings called Anthropogenic Emissions of Methane in the United States, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science. Now, overall, as the Harvard Gazette explains, the study found methane emissions to be 1.5 times to 1.7 times higher than earlier estimates by the Emissions Database for Global Atmospheric Research, also known as EDGAR, and the U.S.
Like an Eggers suit.
Yes. In some regions, however, the difference is much greater. In South Central U.S., for example, methane emissions were found to be well above the EDGAR estimates. Wow.
That's a lot of gas.
It certainly is. I can hear them writing another negative review as we read this.
You can hear them typing them into iTunes right now.
That show is...
That's what we think of those negative reviews, obviously. Tyler, what do you think of those negative reviews there, little buddy? The differences between the paper's findings and the previous assessments appear to be due to the different ways that the estimates were determined. EDGAR, and the EPA used what the Harvard gives. Oh, you know what? I just lost interest in this report. Folks, let me just bring it to you in good old boy Southern real talk, okay? Cows fart, and it causes global warming. Humans ain't responsible anymore. Yuns.
I've kind of heard this line, though, before, you know?
Yeah, it's a real line, all right.
Cows make more gas than even a car or a bus would if it was picking up a bunch of kids to take them to school. We should eat more cows before they fart everywhere.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. We're always looking for that secret message that the media is trying to bring to you. Well, that's what it is. Eat more hamburgers, help the environment. That's important, folks.
Sounds like a slogan of a popular fast food chain.
Yeah,
wait, the opposite. Wait.
Just what are you trying to say? Well, maybe
if it's any consolation to you guys, somebody in the chat room just said that they actually enjoy fart jokes.
Well, you know, I think that they're kind of funny. Here's the thing. Richard Dawkins be damned. I think there's got to be a god, or else, well, you know, why else would we have farts?
Remember the fart-worshipping cult we looked up?
Yes, we actually did look up a flatulence cult on one occasion. You know, I should ask, we should outsource and try and get some information, some perspective from someone else about flatulence cults. And therefore, joining us tonight on the program, live via Canada, we've got Darren and Graham from Grimerica. Gentlemen, how are we tonight?
Hey, we're doing good.
How's it going, Micah?
Doing?
Tyler?
How are you, gentlemen?
Caleb, I was in a fart cult in the 80s, and we were called the Blue Angels. I don't know if you guys have heard of that.
Jet-propelled, I hear.
Flaming farts.
Keep away from open flame.
That's right. Yeah, guys, yeah, Caleb's here hanging in the bunker with us. Now, it's funny because he has apparently been suffering missing time. He says he's never been gone, and yet we haven't seen Caleb in weeks, so we're not sure exactly what's going on. But Caleb, you know, I said that you had a tan. Actually, it may just be the way the light's hitting you. You look kind of pale, actually. If anything, you look kind of robotic.
I don't feel robotic.
He's buffering. He's buffering. Grimes, I missed you at Paradigm. Where have you been?
I've been making babies.
Oh, well, it sounds...
Wow, just right out there.
Yeah. I mean, out of new addition to the Grimes household, so unfortunately that took away from Paradigm this year, but it's great news nonetheless, so we'll be back next year.
It's cold in the igloo. There's not much else to do.
Oh, yeah. What is the temperature like up there?
98.6 from the here.
It's above zero anyway.
It's above zero. Well, you know, this huge winter storm is coming throughout the United States, and right now, I mean, I think it's literally coming from it's striking, as I understand, a curve across the United States from the southwest down around Texas and Arizona and New Mexico all the way up to the Midwestern and even the northeastern states, and so everyone's really worried about Thanksgiving holiday travel. So, I mean, I'm thinking, gosh, I mean, if we're dealing with this and these, what we feel like our frigid temperatures, 20s and 30s down here, it's got to be cold where you guys are.
Well, we had our big storm about a week ago, but it's been cold. I mean, like, I was out on the ice in front of my place yesterday, and there's already probably 5 or 6 inches of ice.
Really? Unbelievable. See, we're going to have to come up there and visit, guys. We'll bring our ice skates. I'm sure,
yeah,
though,
hockey season.
Well, I'm sure that's not the only thing that you guys do to pass your time while you're up there. As a matter of fact, Graham already gave me a little bit of insight about a recent edition of the Grimerica podcast and some experimentation that has been going on.
Yes, we just published Grimericus psilocybus, Enter the Mushroom. So this was a episode. It's a couple hours long of Darren and our friend Joey partaking in some heroic doses of psilocybin.
Oh, really?
Took one for the team.
Oh, really? Okay. See, I was wondering what this all had to do with. Okay, so this is interesting because there was this old program. What was it called? Maybe you guys remember. I think it was called Into the Beyond or something like that. No, I'm drawing a blank. I should really know this, but
Into the Fringe.
Well, I think I don't think that's what it was.
I
really
don't know what you're talking about.
I think
about.
It was called. No, it was called One Step Beyond. Is what it was called. Do you guys remember the program?
Record.
I don't think I've heard of it.
Okay, I think the entire first episode's on YouTube, but One Step Beyond featured in the first episode Dr. Andreas Puharik, which was, I think he'd actually been a CIA agent at one point, or had worked with him in some capacity, but he was an expert on entheogenic mushrooms, and he administers mushrooms to the host in that first episode to see if seriously, and this was back in the 1950s too, which is interesting. This test is administered to see if, under the influence of psychedelic mushrooms, his apparent precognitive abilities might increase. And it found, according to a study that was performed on that episode, and again, I think that this would probably be put under harsher scientific scrutiny today, but what they found during the experiment on the episode was that, indeed, he was more likely to guess correctly in a series of questions, and hence perhaps exhibit some sort of precognitive ability after he had been administered these mushrooms, which I guess that they were probably psychoactive because of psilocybin, which you guys are talking about. So I guess we're getting a redux here now. How did it go for you guys?
Well, I definitely didn't do very well at any of the psychic experiments.
Did you actually do psychic experiments?
Yeah,
we tried.
We tried, yeah. But then I got kind of sidetracked by the paper, and that took me to a little place for a little while, and then we never really got back. But we actually even tried to do some remote viewing all the way in New Zealand, and that failed horribly as well.
See, we had Red Pill Junkie on the line, and Jared from New Zealand, and Jagger from back east Canada, so we were connected to all these people around the world, so we were doing little experiments and games back and forth, and it was a lot of fun.
Just a quick question. What was the date that this experiment took place?
No comment. End of early fall.
Okay. I'm trying to pull things together, correlations, odd ones, but fine if you're going to hold out.
I could definitely text it to you.
Yeah, send me the info. I want to find out.
I seem to remember listening to some of the older podcasts, and you were talking about this coming up. I'm wondering when the next one experiment will be with, is it Mayor Ford?
Oh, yeah,
if
right.
If we could get him on, that'd be great.
I'm sure he would join in.
He probably would. You'd have to get him drunk first, though, right, Tyler?
What's up, guys?
Now, the experiment will be that Darren will astral project into Rob Ford, and then he'll be trapped in this terrible body of, like, gluttony and crack smoke and just, like, have to crawl
just
out.
Like in, what was it, being John Malkovich?
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to just be like a little Darren running around inside Rob Ford's head.
It's like being Rob Ford. It's like, well, I tried to go into Rob Ford's body, but I ended up in like a bear claw that was lodged in his solar plexus.
That guy seems cool to me.
Well, cool, maybe
yeah,
the word
he's
for
cool,
it.
Dude. He does drugs. He like pushes women down on the ground and laughs about it. It's pretty top-notch behavior.
Yeah, for a politician especially. What do you guys think about the Rob Ford scandal, by the way?
Well, we don't really associate ourselves with Eastern Canada too much out here. So really? I'm actually from Eastern Canada, but out west we have a saying for Ontario, it's unterrible.
I just thought you guys were trying to take our like celebrity politician rock star status because it's like we have all the messed up celebrity politicians down here. When's Canada starting to catch up?
I mean, I have sympathy for the guy. Obviously, he's probably got some issues that he needs to look at, and hopefully he will.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's what we're all hoping, seriously. Do us all a favor. No. You know, in truth, I think everybody's just raked him over the coals. I'm gonna play the compassionate card. No, wait, there I go being a good old boy again. Never mind. Tyler, would you pass me the little David the Gnome hat? I'm going to go sit myself in the corner.
He calls the David the dunce hat David the Gnome.
That's why why you think I'm wearing it.
Yeah, true.
Seriously. So what else has been going on in the world of Grimerica, my friends?
We got some good guests coming up. We have Jim Malvage coming up about the simulation theory, that type of thing.
Oh.
We got Fritz Zimmerman coming up about Ohio and the Giants, and we have an episode that we've already recorded with Alex Sakaris from Skeptico. That was a pretty fascinating chat, so that's going to come out next.
Interesting. So now, what was it like talking with Alex?
It was interesting. He's like he's a lot different than a lot of guys you'll interview where he's not afraid to turn it around on you and start asking you questions, which will kind of catch you off guard sometimes.
Interesting. I've been known to do that during interviews myself from time to time, but I always tell the host I'm going to do it. Do you mind if I ask you a question? Interesting.
I like that. I like the back and forth conversation a little bit. Yeah. But he's got balls, man. He's fighting the big battle against the big ass skeptics, and I honestly don't know how he does it. I mean, one day. Maybe I'll enter that ring, but he's got courage.
Well, I thought at Paradigm Symposium that you jumped up at very least, and you were if you weren't in the ring, you were at very least handing someone a towel.
You should have thanked him for his courage.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you for your courage, Graham. Yeah. You know, for those who aren't in the loop, what he did was he happened to stand up and ask PZ Myers, who's, you know, I think probably one of the most skeptical of the big-ass skeptics, and he basically asked him very pointedly why he and other skeptics are so... Well, actually, Graham, you probably should. Yeah, you worded it better than I did. I mean, you were the guy that asked the question. It was really great when you did it, by the way.
Well, thanks. I talked about the Hudson Valley flap and how it was an underrated, flap of sightings. And I said, if there's 7,000 people reporting UFOs in this case, and why can't the big ass skeptics at least admit there's a legitimate phenomena here that deserves further study?
Right. And you know what was interesting
about it?
And what was interesting is PZ's response. He says, well, who's to say that we skeptics don't think that there's something legitimate to study? He says, obviously, there could be something. There's some kind of phenomenon. It also could be government craft. And I remember the way that he worded that, I said, I actually agree with everything he just said. And then we moved on. But after the Q&A, I went back up to PZ and I said to him, PZ, that was really great what you said about UFOs. And he smirks and he goes, well, if you say so, since you say that you and I agree, but we'll see about that.
Did you agree with his comment about everybody being delusional?
Well, no, not that part of it. No, not at all.
Not that part. Okay.
No, but I think he was. No, had he said that in the same portion where he was talking about UFOs?
Yeah, that was basically the ending of his answer was, well, I think that obviously everybody was delusional.
Oh, you're talking about that specific series of sightings though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's something I don't agree with. No, I should be clear about that. What he talked about with regard to, but I think that the way he termed it, it was I should say he was PC enough about it to where he strongly insinuated delusional and psychiatric issues with people who claim to see UFOs without directly saying that every case that is a UFO sighting actually entails this. So I frankly am a little, no, I'm not going to say I'm offended because I'm not someone who likes to say I get offended. I think it's silly. Too many people like PZ get offended really easily and take it out on people like we see him do on his blog. Now, what's interesting is that I've talked with a lot of skeptics, however, who, when they can't explain a UFO incident in any other way, they tend to kind of revert back to that, well, it's likely that this person, you know, it's operator error. This person was wrong in what they saw or what they interpreted. And furthermore, they'll say that this is a delusional experience or that this person is suffering from some sort of a psychotic episode. Whereas I think that it is safe to say that a person does not have to be suffering from a psychotic episode just to be wrong about something that they've observed. So there are levels of complexity that should be, and I'm glad that you pointed that out because I'd forgotten that he'd actually said that. I did agree with everything he said except for the insinuation that people who are mistaken about something that they have seen or otherwise could not identify something that they've observed must be suffering from a mental aberration, because I think that that's a cop-out, frankly. It's very easy for us to say that anyone who sees a UFO is mental, and that removes any necessity for having to explain the deeper complexities that may actually be entailed within an individual witness sighting. Now, what's funny is if we came back to the first thing that PZ had said, Graham, where he goes, you know, government craft and natural phenomenon, what happens if a person sees a government craft that they can't identify or some variety of extremely anomalous looking natural phenomenon? You know, that's not a mental aberration. Sorry, Caleb, go ahead.
What if PZ was PC when he was taking PCP and then somebody called him PZ Herman?
Oh.
Paging Mr. Herman.
Yeah. So anyway, Graham, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, yeah, because I'd forgotten about that component. And yeah, I do get upset when the skeptics, the big-ass skeptics, come after people, and if they have no better excuse, then you're mental. You've suffered from a mental breakdown, a delusion. Look, I'll tell you something else, too, and I'm sorry, I'm not trying to hog all the time because you guys are the guests, but this is important. Graham, you and I especially, because Darren, of course, you know, has been making babies and things, so he hasn't been able to be at a lot of the events, but I'm telling you, Grimes, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to happen again. I mean, this guy used to call me. He used to email me from time to time. He tweeted at me yesterday, I think. But I'm just giving you a hard time, Darren. But Graham actually was at the UFO Congress in February, too, and then he was at Paradigm this year. And so the last the last couple events that I've been at, Graham's been there. There was a woman at the Congress, Graham, that came up to me and who had told me she had been a nurse in a hospital, and that the doctor that she worked with, she had suffered what she believed was an alien abduction. She had a very vivid abduction experience. Now, I don't know what the hell abductions are. You know, I mean, I'm familiar with the literature and I'm undecided on really what that is. When she told the doctor that she worked with, someone who clinically she had worked with, they'd been friends, they were, you know, they had a good rapport. But when she explained to him what had happened to her, he tried to prescribe her antipsychotics and refused to speak to her after that, except for when they had to work together. And it's just such a sad thing that when a person seems to feel that they've had a valid experience and they go to a clinical professional to try and explain what has happened, the doctor says you need antipsychotic medication for that. It really is sad.
Yeah, it is sad, but you know, it's happening at a broader level where they're prescribing antipsychotic medicine for just about anything, so I hear.
Dr. David Hufford, PhD, who is an expert on sleep paralysis, he's another person who's talked about the fact that sleep paralysis is something that a number of people, I'd say maybe the majority of Americans, have experienced it, but they may not know exactly what happened or they didn't think much of it when it did. But when this experience has been described in the past, there have been clinical professionals that have, again, perceived it as a psychotic break from reality and prescribed antipsychotic medications for sleep paralysis. It's absurd.
Sounds like you need some Risperidol, Trazodone. I'm going to go ahead and write you a script for some Ambien, too.
Thank you, Tyler. Dr. Pittman, I presume.
We want you to go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we can find cures for a lot of these ailments in a lot more natural forms than that.
Well, what, mushrooms?
Yeah, we know what you think, shroom man.
Well, but go ahead, Darren.
Possibly. They're using them to treat psilocybin, to treat depression and things like that in Europe.
Yeah, no, I've actually seen some of these studies. I think John Hopkins University had actually conducted a study where I think that the effects of psilocybin for even months, a single dose of psilocybin, and it wasn't mushrooms, it was a synthesized variation that was administered in the lab, but in these experiments, people who were given the psilocybin and had the experience, even for months after the fact, described having a profound change in their worldview. They were happier, they were more spiritually aligned, they felt better about who they were, what they did, and how they lived. And I think that, again, if we could get past I recognize that there's a necessity for regulating certain substances, and there are certain things that are truly, I mean, I think one of them that's referred to as crocodile. Have you guys seen this?
Yeah, we were actually just having a conversation about that right before we came on, about there's actually in Ontario, I hear they're starting to cut cocaine with it. So people are even taking it unknowingly.
Wow, that's terrifying. Well, you know, I'll just say that that is among a number of illegal substances that really are damaging. But there are also, I think, certain substances that are at present prohibited that probably have medical uses. And I'm not just talking about, like, for instance, marijuana being used to treat things like glaucoma and used as a pain reliever. I mean, I'm talking about long-term health benefits and other benefits that may be drawn from, and then in terms of not just actual physical health, but also mental health and such things that can be drawn from the implementation of these things in measured ways. But again, the first step has to be, I think, coming down off of this old school prohibition attitude that everything is evil just because we say so. I mean, I know it's more complex than that, and it's kind of a difficult discussion to have, but I'm not a user of substances, by the way, and I still feel this way. Maybe that's the libertarian in me, but, you know, I think it's kind of like saying that, you know, we've got this beautiful plant over here that we found in the Amazon that could cure cancer, but we've also found that, you know, 15-year-old junkies can get high off of it, and so we're going to tell you that no one's allowed to use it. No one's allowed to study it. Now, granted, there are studies done with some of these substances, but still, it's illegal to be able to obtain these things for people to use, even if they do have holistic or actual health benefits. So I wonder sometimes about, you know, opening at very least the dialogue on the benefits that might be drawn from some of these things.
Well, even things like, not to step on you, raw milk are illegal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there are a lot of things that are a lot more mundane than substances. Sorry, Darren, jump in there.
Well, it's not only that. I mean, I don't even look at it like some of these drugs, like they're growing naturally in our ecosystems right now. So technically, it's not illegal to grow them. It's illegal to pick them, I guess.
Right.
You can go out for a walk, pick some mushrooms, put them in your pocket, and go to prison for life.
Yeah. One of the really interesting instances for me, by the way, along the same lines of what you're talking about, is DMT, dimethyltryptamine. Again, illegal for purchase and for use and possession, and yet it's it's a close chemical cousin of tryptophan and melatonin. It's produced in our bodies. You know, it's very interesting. And granted, I mean, I think that you could also say that drinking blood is illegal just as well.
Mina.
I don't think that they want to condone taking things that occur naturally in the body and giving them to people focused amounts.
In fun form?
Yeah, in fun form, yeah, exactly. In concentrated amounts, if you will, which is essentially what happens with DMT. So, I don't know, it's a strange situation, though. Again, though, if we look at the clinical studies that were carried out by Rick Strassman back in the 1990s, I mean, a lot of people had profound, life-changing positive effects after being administered dimethyltryptamine.
Yeah, a lot of these things, I think, are being kind of pushed to the side, and they could be really helping us in a lot of different ways in our society. And I mean, look at like things like meth and bath salts and stuff like that. To me, are a direct product of the war on drugs. People can't get cocaine or marijuana or these things anymore, so they're just making stuff in their bathtub.
That's an interesting point.
Crocodile.
That's
which is basically like antifreeze with some other really good drugs in it. But
you like leprosy? Here you go, kid. No, actually, hold on. I want to say something real quick. Darren actually makes a very good point. Yeah, when you prohibit naturally occurring entheogens and things, I mean, look, marijuana, granted, it's becoming more, or I should say less taboo in certain states, and the United States, of course, are beginning to legalize it and whatnot. But it's funny because these naturally occurring hallucinogens, which may even have in measured amounts, benefits in certain circumstances, these things are prohibited. And yes, you're right. As a result of that alleged war on drugs, often what we end up seeing is the production of much more harmful things that people are cooking in their bathtubs and you know, and old radiators and things behind their house. I mean, it's actually a very good point.
Well, not only that, we don't even know how much of an impact some of these substances might have on our own, you know, prehistory or development or evolution even.
I hear that reminds me, you guys had a chance to speak with Dennis McKenna, did you not?
Yeah, we did. I think, it seems so long ago now. I think must have been in June or beginning of June.
July, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he lives up there near where we do the Paradigm Symposium, does he not? Isn't he in Minneapolis?
Yeah, he's in St. Paul, I think, or just outside. I was actually supposed to bump into him when I came down there, but we ended up having the baby that week and didn't pan out. But I actually talked to him about stopping by, but he was booked someplace else, or he was talking about swinging by on the Sunday.
Oh, that would have been great, yeah. I'd love to meet Dennis McKenna myself. Of course, the brother of the late Terence McKenna, who authored Food of the Gods and a number of other fascinating treatises on the use of entheogens and also ethnobotany. Fascinating stuff. Guys, what else is coming up on the podcast? I don't want to keep you too long because I understand you're going to be doing another interview tonight after this.
Yeah, we're jumping on with Cam and Kyle from Expanded Perspectives to have a chat with them.
Never heard of them.
I think you've had them on before.
Yeah, I'm just kidding. They're good friends. Great friends. In fact, I see them in the chat room here tonight, so they're listening into you so that they don't ask the same questions later.
Yeah, and of course, we'll be having our old friend, our first guest, Efrain Palermo. We'll be having him on again because he actually, I think just yesterday, his Alien Cartel book published on Amazon.
Well, excellent. Fantastic. Well, it sounds like the podcast is going pretty well, and I understand Mr. Red Pill Junkie, our good friend here at the bunker, he is a regular staple on the program.
Yeah, we hope to keep it that way and maybe even look to having him on a little more down the road.
That's right. I keep telling him he needs to do more appearances, really. It needs to happen. But speaking of, I know you guys have got places to be, things to do, so go be famous, and Darren, you should email me sometime, like Graham does.
I will do that for sure, Micah.
If you're not too busy making babies.
Oh, yeah, and by the way, Micah,
yes.
I really enjoy Middle Theory. I've been enjoying the episodes.
Oh, thank you very much. Yeah, you know, we had a few tech issues earlier today, but yeah, I've really been enjoying it too. You know, it's always good to be able to communicate with people. You know, I get to hang out with Caleb and Tyler an awful lot, and I've been wanting to do something with Chris McCollum. Boy, a guy who really brings a different perspective to all this. It's always great to talk with him. It's the very same reason we had you on tonight. It's always good just to kind of see what's going on in the world of Grimerica. You guys are good friends of us here at the Gray Alien, and I hope to have you back again real soon, okay?
Yeah, anytime, and we'll have to have you on actually soon to talk about your latest book.
That's right. Yeah, we haven't done a Grimerica Ghost Rockets interview, so anytime you're ready, you let me know, okay?
All right, guys.
Okay, Mike, have a good night.
You guys stay warm up there. We'll talk soon. That's Darren and Graham from Grimerica, one of our favorite podcasts here on the Gray Alien Report. Wonderful guys, good friends of the program, and of course, we get to hang out. Graham and I actually spent a lot of time together, he and Red Pill Junkie and I at Paradigm this year, so it's always good to catch up with those guys. And again, I think that's a really good point that Darren makes because you often hear assertions about the failure on the war on drugs. Why is the war on drugs a failure? Aside from the fact that, you know, the CIA and, you know, organizations in the government are actually, you know, benefiting from the drug trade, but that's a different conversation we could have altogether.
Micah, you keep talking about things that I don't understand. You said you have a show with Chris McCollum, but I've never heard of that name before. I do know of a person called McNonymous.
The man known as McNonymous.
Does he have his own mask?
What?
He should, like, have a mask.
Well, he does, actually. It's funny, because the story was the first day that we did a Middle Theory podcast, he thought we were going to be doing video. And so Chris, by the way, for those who don't know, Chris used to live here in Asheville, and Chris and I have been involved in a number of endeavors over the years together. We used to do a blog called Culture of Spirits, which was a really kind of a sophisticated website about the culinary aspects of alcohol, talking about, you know, classic craft cocktails and things. And also, we often described it as like the Wall Street Journal of the cocktail movement, because it was a website that dealt, we would look at, like, we would seriously do journalistic pieces that looked at the economics underlying, you know, the cocktail trade, you know, like, for instance, I believe that it's pronounced Diadago. They're one of the largest distributors of rum and other spirits in the United States, and we'd always follow what they were doing and things like that. It was kind of a fun thing, but it's even more of a niche market than the paranormal. And so Chris went off to Prince Edward Island and completed a history degree. And that was probably right about the same time you were finishing your sociology degree, Tyler. And now he's going to law school in New York. And we finally decided, after I have two programs I'm already doing each week, right?
Sure.
That we would add one more. But so, Caleb, you've never heard of that?
McNonymous.
McNonymous, yes, that's the nickname. So on the first broadcast, he shows up thinking we're going to be doing a video stream, and he's got aviator sunglasses on, and he's got this this like American flag bandana wrapped around his face.
What were you wearing? Did you have like on that rebel flag that you always like to prance around in the yard with?
Are you kidding me? Micah Hanks was all camo.
That's right. I was all... you guys. Oh, gosh. You know, when we come back here on the Graylean Report, we're going to get into a little more news, but we're also going to do our special tribute to all of you out there, our Thanksgiving tribute to you from the Graylians. Having a slightly lighthearted episode tonight in the keeping of the holiday spirit, I'm looking forward to having a bit of a tryptophan high later in the week myself. It is the Graylean Report with Caleb, Tyler, and Micah. We'll be back right after this.
Exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylean Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
Broadcasting live from the dark heart of Appalachia, it is the Graylean Report. I'm Micah Hanks, along with Caleb Hanks, joining us in studio after a brief sojourn. And of course, the Dark Cardinal himself, who's always here with us Tuesday nights, from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, Mr. Tyler Pittman. It is the Graylean Report with the Graylean Gang. All of us wearing red and green Hadal sweaters. Sweaters actually made from the mane that grows down the back of a Hadal.
Yeah, mine even has slashes like Freddy got a hold of me.
As a matter of fact, the striped sweaters, we have a word for that around here. We actually call them Freddies in tribute to the original boogeyman.
Mr. Krueger.
Mr. Krueger himself, that's right. Well, there it is.
It's a boy!
Exactly. Thanks always for tuning in live to the program, and for those of you who catch the podcast after the fact. You know, we got a little bit of the Mysterious Universe bump this week because I was promoting the Ghost Rockets on their program this past weekend. Doing what I do best, of course, going on their show, talking about my podcast, being a windbag, thinking too much of myself, being too Southern, talking too much, you know, doing Alex Jones impressions. Let me say how much I actually enjoy Alex Jones' radio show. I haven't had a chance to listen in a long time, but I really find him to be an entertaining host.
As do I.
Don't you? I mean, what's not entertaining about him? And actually, I find him very knowledgeable about a lot of things, too. One of his listeners, it may have been his wife, had tried the Graylean Report for a little while, and that person did not like what they perceived as us being too harsh on Alex. And so I know one of the negative reviews we mentioned earlier had to do with that. But, you know, I just want to say I respect people's, well, differences and opinions on what we talk about on this program. The views that we express sometimes are the views of the host, but not always, especially when we have guests like Lyle Blackburn, who's going to be on the program next week. But, you know, I respect people's differences. That's okay.
I don't know that we were ever hard on Alex, were we?
Well, I think we've had a little
maybe
fun.
Maybe a story he put out.
We've had a little fun looking at things that he has said, like, you know, the NSA is listening to you through the light bulbs in your house.
Well, I'm not so sure that's just a conjecture.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, anything's possible, I guess. And that's the thing is that people have often said to me, you know, before you criticize Alex Jones, listen more carefully to what he says. But, I mean, I've gone through periods where I've listened to his show every single day. And, again, why would I listen to his show every day if I didn't enjoy what I was hearing? But then again, whether I take all of it entirely seriously is another thing. So, anyway, that's my stance on Alex Jones. He's an entertainer. He's an intelligent person, a hyper-intelligent individual. But I think he's also a person who has a certain way of looking at the world and also maybe inflating certain aspects of that perspective in a way that is conducive to his enterprise. But that's what everybody does who wants to be successful, right?
Yeah, I mean, I almost see him as a comedian of sorts. I mean, I think he's doing it to be entertaining, and he's got a sense of humor.
He has got a sense of humor. I mean, you'd have to be playing like Conan the Barbarian coming back from every break.
I've got to check out this link to see how Alex decodes the Hunger Games.
Yeah, speaking of decodes, this crazy story, I'm not going to get into it right now. I haven't really had time to really dig into this, but there's this story out this week about this crazy coding, this cipher, this thing. It's called, what do they refer to it as here? I think I've got it someplace. This something, 3301 Cicada, something like that. It's really interesting. I think we had it linked up actually in the Graylian Daily News today. But of more interest than that, right now, before I go any further, I want to come back to Caleb real quick. Caleb, you've been working on something recently, and this is part of the reason you've been taking a little time off. I hear you've got a big project that you would like to make an announcement about. In fact, actually, I'm sorry, full disclosure, people, I want him to make the announcement. But yeah, go ahead. So
I have an announcement. Now, I've been working on a bizarre multimedia project that is going to be free to the public for your downloading pleasure. It is called The Clerk. It is, the website is theclerkchronicles.com, and it's kind of adventures in a post-singularity world or some crazy things like that. And I have a 5-song EP of bizarre electronic music that I wrote, recorded, mixed, and mastered all myself. And that will be for download at theclerkchronicles.com for free on December 2nd.
Excellent. Theclerkchronicles.com.
Yep. And that website is up right now, so if anybody wants to check out, there's just kind of a intro page there, but it will go on to have a lot of other content. And I don't know, it's not going to be just a static web comic. There's going to be movement and video and looping music and all kinds of crazy stuff. Lots of Easter eggs. Lots of just kind of, you have to look for all kinds of weird stuff on there. So
that sounds great. I'll tell you, you know, Caleb, I've followed his stuff. Well, I've hardly been able to avoid it. We play some of his music here on the program. And so The Clerk Chronicles, if you want to find an interesting combination of electronic music, futurism, and fine art, well, that's going to be Caleb's new project, theclerkchronicles.com. If you liked Gray Street, you'll like The Clerk.
Hold on to your butts.
That's right. Now, since this is a musical project, do we have a clip here?
I believe we do.
You do? Okay, good. Okay, so we've got actually a song that we're going to feature here. This is off the upcoming Clerk Chronicles.
Yeah, this song is called Echoes, and it's on the, you can play it on the front page of the website right now.
Let's tune in for a moment.
Trust me, I'll always use my perfection. The way you do.
little preview of Caleb Hank's new project from the Clerk Chronicles. Caleb, that song again, the title?
That song's called Echoes.
And that's streaming live on the main site if you visit theclerkchronicles.com. Fantastic.
Thanks a lot, man.
Looking forward to hearing some more here on the program, of course. And I'm very proud to say that I think this is the first official, unofficial promotional mention of this on a program or podcast.
Yeah, this is the first time anybody knows anything about it. And like I was telling the chat room, I'm drawing all this stuff myself. So it's just a big heap of work, really.
Oh, it always is. You know, we know what it's like to be an artist, to slave and to painstakingly work over something that you don't get any actual money back for.
No, just people
who pick apart what you do and say that you're too Southern when you try and do it. So, gosh, poor Tyler.
I can't wait to lug around some crates like the true goblin slave I am when you go on tour over there.
No, it's very easy to, and this is what's difficult about being an artist, by the way, is, you know, that you bear your soul to the world at risk of, after, you know, bleeding and sweating and crying over what you've done and putting your heart and your soul and sometimes more, sometimes a little excrement into what you've done.
And then some troll on a website is going to be like, this sucks.
And here's why. Okay.
But that's the cool thing about this is I'm not doing anything live with it. This lives solely on the internet. And I don't want to be on the road anymore, frankly.
I mean, you toured for a long time.
Yeah. So, and I just don't really see the point in it anymore. I played shows all over the place to no one sometimes, and if I can reach a lot of people with this, and but if from the comfort of their homes, then all the better, because I can do it from the comfort of mine as well.
I read a report a while back that said that concert attendance is believed to be down in a number of instances because of the prevalence of concert footage streaming live on and just available on YouTube. Like, think about it, Coachella. You know, you can get on during Coachella.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've got to say, concert attendance being down is different than like what do they call them, like festivals?
Yeah.
The hell would I ever be caught at a festival?
Well, see, that's the thing, though. Think about this: if you've got surround sound, if you've got a huge, beautiful, you know, in-home theater, I mean, why wouldn't you invite 12 or 15 friends over? You know, stream Florence and the Machine or stream somebody, whoever's performing at Coachella live on stage on YouTube in high quality, you know, and sit there and have drinks and do whatever you want to. If you're Grimerica and the guys, they might be doing something else. God knows. But but no, seriously, I mean, you could be having as much fun as you want in the comfort of your own home and be watching this live. And you still kind of, I mean, it's not quite like the bass and the bodies all around you and the feeling of being at a live concert. We've all been there, but, well, most of us. But the thing is that, I mean, I think that it is interesting that there is this digital presentation, and this is why companies and organizations like YouTube and sites like YouTube are making these kinds of things available and partnering with these events, because the reach that they get beyond the tickets they sell and the people that go to actually be there, it's incredible. It's, you know, the web has brought together the music industry in such a peculiar way, and the trick is trying to really find out how to profit from
it. Yeah, basically destroyed it.
Yeah,
seriously, there's no the industry now is
my plan is just to do this, and if people want to give me money, I will make it very available for them to do so with PayPal buttons and such.
Excellent. Do you have PayPal buttons on the site already?
Not yet, but they will grow like a fine cancer.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it there. Nikki in Australia in our chat room is saying we need to have a hologram of Caleb performing, kind of like what we
Tupac.
Did. Yep, that's right.
That sounds great to me.
I think we need a hologram of Caleb and Tupac performing.
Yeah, I mean, that would be cool. I like Tupac.
Yeah, they could do that new Reggie song.
Seriously, I mean, I think we've been there. The possibilities are endless.
Yeah, viewing a concert in your home is cool if the concert happened in like 1979 or you just couldn't make it to the show, but there are a few bands, if they came through somewhat close proximity, I'd be there.
Well, Tyler, okay, then whatever. We'll just go back to talking about cow farts. Sorry.
Yeah, you watch it on YouTube. Oh, well, hold on. First, you have to watch this Zelle Jans commercial for 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And then little pop-ups.
I know what I'll do.
That's how they I was going to say that's one way that they've monetized it is the pop-up ads, you know. And notice some of them, you know, there's the click after 5 seconds. You have to watch the first 5 seconds. Now, think about this, though. Have you ever caught an ad on YouTube that within that first 5 seconds you kept watching it? Because within
no.
after rather the first 5 seconds, no, I've actually there've been like a couple of trailers for films and things that
yeah I've done that
yeah I'll see it and I'm ready to click and then I'm thinking wait what is this and I'm compelled enough. See that's I used to work in the ad industry and I find it interesting when you are able in 5 seconds to catch somebody's ear. We used to work with what was called what did they call them, blinks, I think. The idea, for instance, like a McDonald's ad would just be ba da ba ba ba, and they just insert.
You just gave them a free advertisement.
Yes, I did. I did, and the reason why is because, well, I mean, it's a good example. I mean, seriously, that little chime, that little ditty, is so recognizable that now, if you want to, as a person's driving down the road, put in their mind the idea, talk about, tell it. Wait, this could be a number of different things, but you know, mind control to an extent. Or programming at the least.
Trigger.
It's a trigger. Yeah, you want to make somebody go to McDonald's and buy French fries. Literally, all you have to play is that little ditty in between commercial spots on a mainstream radio station, and somebody's going to be like, oh. I mean, they know exactly what it is, and then they start thinking about fries.
I know what I can do to actually make money is I will make myself an artist that is exclusive to Second Life, and I only perform there, and that way then Second Life will give me part of their stock.
You can be Caleb, okay, like what Scotty and I did with Paradigm Symposium, what Wayne and Garth did with Wayne Stock, you can do with Second Life. You can promote and plan for the first Second Life festival, a concert, a rock concert that goes on only in Second Life.
All the guys from Guitar Hero will be there.
Yeah, I mean, actually, you know, it could be interesting, though. I mean, think about that, a virtual concert.
And you can only pay to get into the concert with Bitcoin.
Yeah, there it is. There it is.
Looks like attendance was pretty low, guys. The promoter just didn't do a good job.
Yeah, seriously. No, I mean, and that's the thing.
The Second Life thing is interesting, though.
It is very interesting.
I think the implication of Second Life is really crazy. I mean, and especially with the rise of graphics, the way they are going. And I don't know if you guys know much about the new, like, Macintosh computers. They're more kind of, I'm talking about the kind of black cylindrical Mac, those little weird Darth Vader helmet looking computers. They're actually way more suited towards computer animation and production and stuff like that, to where the normal consumer is probably not too terribly interested in that kind of computer. But I mean, with technology getting, you know, quicker and smaller and better, there's no telling what virtual realities are going to start getting to. And we have things like Google Glass, but if you think about it, if you have, like, glasses that really, like, encompass your head and don't let any sort of outside light in, to where you can move your head around and in these 3D environments and actually turn your head and look at somebody else in there, you know, it's going to get pretty interactive. I think, I don't know what the market's going to be, really. You can never predict, like, how popular something like that would be, but I think that those technologies are coming, and for the entertainment and interactive social kind of networking way, I think it could get pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, they'll be like salivating to strap all that stuff to the heads of pupils inside the classrooms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, yeah.
Make arithmetic fun.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, there's a lot that could be said about that. But anyway, we're up on a break, by the way, and so we're going to go and take a break so that we can go be Graylians, then come back and be Graylians again. Yeah, we blew through the last break.
Yeah, I gotta go take a Graylian real quick.
Who really needs breaks anyway, right? What does break rhyme with?
Give me a break.
Don't answer that. I'm Micah Hanks. It is the Graylian Report. And when we come back, we're going to discuss some hijinks that literally led to the burning down of a historic building during a ghost hunt right after this. From the darkest corner of the web, it is the Graylian Report. I am the carefully charismatic, the frivolously flamboyant, the enjoyably pompous mouth of the South, Mr. Micah Hanks. And we're keeping you company this week. All joking aside here, there's this story that really had me a little troubled. There's a lot that could be said here. Some of you have probably seen this, in fact. Four Grand Prairie ghost hunters are now among a group that was charged with burning down a Louisiana plantation. Caleb, I think you actually were the first one that brought this to my attention.
Indeed.
I didn't even heard about this, and well, here's the story. If you haven't seen this, I'm sure that, and this is what's sad, is that, being a person who plants himself in the center, not because I don't, this isn't, again, I'm sorry, I shouldn't probably spend so much time discussing this and worrying about it, but, there's a misconception that a person who tries to be moderate about things can't make up their mind about what they actually think. I'm very clear on what I think, and this is what I think. I think that when you choose to be so much one thing or another, you may blind yourself to other alternatives. The majority of our listenership gets that. Thank you for listening, for being intelligent enough to understand, which we typically, of course, we I guess, expect that from the people who listen to the Graylian Report, but thank you for being people who get that, because more people do need to get that. You can't be so polarized in your viewpoints. But the problem is that when we see stories like what we're looking at here, where people who, the long story short here, okay, let's just whittle it all down, a bunch of kids go on a ghost hunt. I think that they'd actually been smoking pot while they were investigating the LeBeau plantation house. It was built in the 1850s. It burned down as a result of what took place during this investigation. What does this have to do with the polarization of attitudes between belief and skepticism? Well, what do you think skeptical investigators, researchers, I guess you might call them, skeptical pundits, bloggers, what do you think that they think when they see a story like this?
Ghost hunting is just a cover for racist stuff.
No, what it is they're going to say, okay, you know what? This is what ghost hunting leads to. I'm not exactly a huge fan of ghost hunting. I will tell you this. I got my start early on when I was a young person who was interested in the unexplained. I got my start hunting ghosts. Tyler did. Caleb did. Sharon Hill even told me a while back that she had gone on a ghost hunt. And she didn't agree with what she saw, but she's also a person like P.Z. Myers, like a lot of people in the skeptical community, who started off and they had the same sort of questions. It's just that we all choose different paths to go in life. Some of us maintain a degree of belief. Some of us go down a more skeptical bend. I'm kind of in the middle in the sense that I don't think that we should just all be cheerleaders for know nothing exists. But I'm also not going to just say that because I like UFOs that everybody's being abducted in their sleep and that, 9 out of 10 Americans just don't remember it and that there's this genetic hybridization program going on. That may be the case. I don't know. Clearly, there's got to be a middle ground where there is some truth to this UFO component, or when it comes to ghost hunting or anything else, there's got to be some element of truth to these experiences or whatever natural phenomenon is underlying this. I'm immediately suspect of anyone who can make a case that is 100% always, in every instance, either 100% for or against anything. There usually is a little gray area. I think I'm pretty firm on that, and I think I'm being quite clear in stating that, and it concerns me when I see something like this case where four Grand Prairie residents, these young men, were arrested this week after they allegedly were involved in burning down a historic plantation where they were smoking marijuana and looking for ghosts. These aren't really ghost hunters. These aren't people who were involved in any actual serious paranormal investigation. This was a group of young men who were looking for fun, looking, to have a good time, and I think that it got out of hand. Seven people in all were arrested, according to crime blog. The crime blog at the DallasNews.com website. Now, they are accused of destroying the LeBeau Plantation House, which is a structure built in the 1850s. It is considered the largest pre-Civil War mansion still standing in the New Orleans area. Well, it was. The house was reportedly built on an indigo plantation, was later used as a hotel and a casino, and then even left vacant for a period of 30 years, which, of course, had led up to the present day. Local lore, of course, had said that the house was haunted. Law enforcement told reporters that trespassing was a regular problem in this locale. Authorities said that the men that were arrested were smoking marijuana and drinking on the site. They'd been looking for ghosts and trying to summon spirits by beating on the doors.
That always gets them out.
That's right.
Open up! Make, it's the police!
Let's make some noise. Yeah.
Psych! Ghosts. Bunch of dope-smoking morons!
Now, this is what it says, though. It says, when no ghosts emerged... This is actually what it says in this article here. When no ghosts emerged, the group set the mansion on fire.
I'll show them spooks.
Now, again, the question is whether or not this... I mean, if these people... I think that there had actually... Some of the men had actually been charged with arson, so I'm getting the impression... That, you know, what we can, you know, draw from that is that some people actually feel that what was actually going on here was that these men intentionally went in there with a lighter and burned the place to the ground for kicks. That is not study of the unexplained. That is not even what we would call, and I hate the term, but that's not ghost hunting. That's a bunch of people acting like idiots.
At least it didn't say, the story didn't have something along the lines of, blew up the plantation with an IED.
Well, you know, the thing is that the way that the media always tends to handle these things is that they're gonna use a catch term. Yeah, these guys, again, look at this. I love this. It says, Grand Prairie Ghost Hunters. When I first heard about this story, I perceived that it was people who were involved in an investigation who had brought a bunch of equipment, scientific equipment that they didn't know how to use, and that they were all in there pretending to try and find ghosts and do it seriously, and that something had gotten out of hand and that they'd probably accidentally burnt the house down, you know? But again, earlier today, I'd seen that, again, the term arson is being used in conjunction with some of the arrests, because they're saying that these men literally burnt this place to the ground. And again, I say men cautiously. Really, they look more like boys. They're young men.
Yeah, but does I'd want to look at the law, because I wonder if arson means that you burnt something down, or arson means that you had the intent before you burn it down to burn it down.
You know,
yeah, they probably just dropped a stogie or something.
Well, no, I don't think so. I mean, again, the way that this is worded, it seems to lead us to believe that these men had intentionally burnt this house down. I mean, why you would do something like that?
Kill them ghosts.
Listening to too much Bloodhound Gang.
Well, it is.
Listening to too much Dan Fogelberg.
Well, it is disturbing. And again, this is the point that I like to try and make here. The skeptics, this gives the skeptics fodder. And when I say skeptics, I'm talking about the big S skeptics, the types of people who everything can be explained, nothing that seems unusual is real. You know, if gravity didn't have, well, actually, to tell you the truth, that's the thing. We don't have a complete explanation for gravity. It's an observable force in our universe, but we don't fully understand gravity. There are a lot of things that we don't fully understand about our universe. But there are some people who literally evoke proudly the ridicule factor anytime it seems to come into question. And I'm just as... I'm not someone who's going to damn anyone who claims to be a ghost hunter by any means. Again, I've been there, but part of my attitude toward quote-unquote ghost hunting is having been around it and having seen how people call what they call science, yeah, and how they carry that out. I mean, there's very little about it that's scientific.
Well, not to, you know, toot our own horn or build ourselves up more than we already do, but when we first started doing this kind of thing, there weren't television shows. You know, sci-fi showed Tales from the Crypt all the time.
When I was, yeah, when the three of us, for instance, when we became interested in these kinds of, you know, things, I mean, there weren't television shows and the like that were dedicated to this sort of thing. And I have to say that the TV shows and the people that try and emulate what they see people doing on television, it's very different from serious parapsychological research. I have to say that there is such a thing as real parapsychological, the research that could be carried out in a laboratory. There are experiments and tests that could be designed. I don't think that any to date have conclusively proven what we might call proof of a ghost or anything like that. But I mean, I'm not saying that there might not be a scientific way that this could be carried out and that parapsychological phenomenon could be studied. But I'm sorry, breaking into a house and burning it down is not that. And people of the big S skeptic ilk, of course they're going to jump all over this story and say, oh, look what these ghost hunters did. These guys aren't really ghost hunters.
This reminds me of a video I watched back towards Halloween, because I'd never actually seen the show Ghost Adventures. And I watched the documentary or something because someone had said there was like a brick throwing thing that a ghost did. But I started watching it, and the first, like, 10 minutes, the main guy's like, come on out, I'm slitting my wrists, just like you died. It's like, you would never find that kind of thing in a serious circle. And if these boys intentionally burnt down the plantation, I'd hate to be them, because you know there's some angry spirits down in New Orleans that are not going to let them get away with it.
Are you being serious?
For sure.
I mean, if... Yeah.
It's very, very bad to drink Joe Boo's rum.
I feel like I'm channeling something right now. We'll see these boys be picked off one by one.
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, who knows? Yeah, if you want to go in that direction and say maybe that there was the danger of evoking some bad juju.
Well, we know New Orleans is, you know, infamous for the spooks.
There are a lot of stories. And look, I've known people who've said that they've had strange things happen, you know, especially when they were involved in areas and in certain kinds of activities and things like that pertaining to ghosts, of course. So who knows? Maybe there are strange spirit influences that can stem from the afterlife and can affect us in the daily life or in our everyday life. But again, I hate to use it entirely as a point for social commentary, but I mean, it really is that, because the important point to be made here is that these people are not ghost hunters. These were young men who were just out thrill-seeking and, frankly, doing stupid things, things so stupid that it led actually to the destruction of property. And so, unfortunately, I think we can say, without dismissing ghost hunting and actual valid parapsychological research that can be carried out scientifically, and frankly, I don't think that there's anything wrong with a person who is non-scientific but who likes going to haunted houses, reading books about haunted houses. Hell, I wrote a book about the history of the Reynolds Mansion, which was built in the 1840s here in Asheville. And yes, as part of the history of that house, I document some of the ghost stories that were told about that, because those are fun. People like hearing ghost stories. It's fun. I do at times in the book also, I get a little critical of modern ghost hunting programs and what people call the science, the alleged science of ghost hunting. I go after that and I talk about how absurd those kinds of things are, but I still maintain that you can remove that and you can recognize how absurd some of that is and still enjoy the stories and still actually maybe take into consideration that there are some people who have had experiences that are actually valid. I'm not convinced that what a lot of people call the science that is being applied to the study of these things that you see on television, I am not convinced that any of that is truly scientific or worthy of trying to understand or even capable of helping us better understand things about unexplained phenomena that occurs that we might liken to being a haunting. So I certainly think, though, that if there is anything to what we call ghostly phenomenon, parapsychological phenomenon, poltergeist phenomenon, all these kinds of things, there would be a scientific way to go about it, but you don't have to be a scientist to be able to enjoy the folklore and the mythos of a ghost story, frankly. You know, but see, I think that, again, we see something like this. The media chooses to call these guys ghost hunters because they were allegedly going into a haunted house looking for a fun time. That's not parapsychology. That's not the study of the unexplained. This is a bunch of people acting like idiots, plain and simple. You wait. Let's see how many of the skeptical blogs will damn these people and use this as an argument against parapsychology, against the serious study of ghostly phenomenon, and whether or not that's your cup of tea.
Yeah, the only people reading those are ghosts anyway.
Well, you know, I mean, it's a sad thing. It's a sad thing because, unfortunately, thanks in part to the way that the media grabs onto a catch term and calls these guys ghost hunters. I would have said, if I were writing that article, youths involved in trespassing incident lead to destruction of historic mansion.
I would say, dope smoking morons done bad again.
There you go. That's right. Perpetrate that meme, Tyler. But I mean, you know, that's the thing is that this is the way that the media tends to handle these kind of things. You know, if you are a UFO researcher, man believes aliens may be visiting Earth. If you are, you know, going into a house and you accidentally burn the place down because it was alleged to be haunted, you are a ghost hunter. And this makes everybody look bad.
This is just PR, an advertisement for the upcoming Ghostbusters movie.
Is there one?
Yeah.
See, look, I must be psychic, guys, because I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you're a real good psychic.
I am,
yeah, boy, you must be on ghost pills.
Yeah.
Have they really done much else with the third Ghostbusters movie, though? Because it's been in the works for, like, 6 years.
They've got, last I read, they have Seth Rogen in it now.
Yeah.
I think it's shot.
Huh.
Well, that should tell you something when they have
to. I think. I could be wrong. Last thing I read made it sound like it was in the can.
How are you going to watch a movie without Bill Murray?
He's going to be voicing a ghost.
I hope it's just a Bill Murray ghost.
It's going to be a terrible, well, maybe not terrible.
I thought I'd heard that he actually
like
was
the
playing
Smurfs.
I think he is playing a ghost.
Yep.
Yeah, I think he actually is playing a ghost in the film, if I remember correctly. So, yeah.
And he died in Zombieland.
Yeah, that was
yeah,
kinda,
that works.
That's kind of funny how that works.
And they'll have, I'm forgetting his name, never mind.
Well,
what was the guy in Zombieland whose dad was part of the supposed Kennedy conspiracy?
Woody Harrelson?
Yeah, Woody Harrelson will be in there, like, natural-born killer style, creating all these ghosts.
That's hilarious. Well, we'll see what happens. Speaking of, and actually changing gears, has anyone here actually seen, has anyone managed to see Comet Ison yet?
Every time we go out to look at night, it is below our...
It's always below the horizon, isn't it? Yeah, it's always...
Yes.
Yeah, I have not seen Ison one time, and I have continually, leading up to this November, remember all the stories that we were hearing about this thing. Oh, man, it's going to be so huge. It's going to be like there are two moons in the sky. I haven't seen the thing one time.
Seriously, it seems like as soon as the sun goes down, Ison goes down below the horizon line. So, I mean, I haven't seen it. And I remember all those claims of, you can walk outside and there's going to be comet dust showering down. It's like...
It'll just be like, yeah, Rise of the Planet of the Apes. The stuff's going to hit us.
Tyler, use your big boy voice.
But it's like every other claim that they have like that. I guess it's just to like draw attention to, I don't know, lame like
Ison has six tails now
and stuff.
Do you have a regular voice?
But it's like, do you remember when they were talking about, and they've done this like 14 times, where they'll say Mars is going to be the size of the moon, and that's physically impossible from our viewpoint.
Well, I'm looking at this report that came out. Scientists have observed what they are actually saying is a decreased light emission from Ison, okay, which could mean that this comet, it's actually composed of a lot of different things, including actual space dust, what we might call. Some people actually think that it has broken apart on its trajectory toward the sun. Interesting. Not Wired magazine. I think The Wire actually carried it. Is that part of Atlantic? Well, anyway. The comet's close flyby to our sun already makes it difficult to study, and so there's no clear answer as to the fate, but apparently this decrease in light has caused astronomers to debate truly whether stargazers are even going to be able to see this thing as of Thanksgiving night. So it's interesting to me that this comet that had been billed as being something that would rival the moon in the night sky for brightness...
They always say that same line.
They always say,
yeah,
this
I've
is
heard
good.
It before, but I can't recall what the celestial object was last go-around. It was back in, like, 2011 or 12.
Now, listen to this, though. Now, this is interesting because there's this statement that was released by the NASA Ison Comet Observing Campaign, and they said, quote, "The last time we saw an object like this was never." Interesting.
Yeah, because we can't see it.
Yeah. Well, I wonder if that's actually what they mean. They said they're keeping their hopes high by hosting a Google Hangout on Thursday called Fire versus Ison. But yeah, apparently, yeah, we're worried now if we're even going to be able to see this tremendous comet that will rival the size of the moon. It's going to be like another little planet Earth hanging out up there. It's going to be so big. It's going to be so big if there were a little alien standing on it, you'd be able to see him waving at you.
It's going to be so big that maybe people will come to my crappy blog.
Yeah, exactly. And then what actually happens? Nothing. Nothing. I'm so tired of nothing. People ask me why I'm a skeptic. Goodness. When we come back, we're going to finish up this week's edition of the Graylian Report. I'm not going to hold my breath waiting to see Ison, but maybe we'll see something else strange in the sky. We'll come back right after this. It is the Graylian Report, and of course, I'm your host, the Mouth of the South, Micah Hanks, careening on a comet into the Thanksgiving season. We'll be back right after this. We'll be right back. So there was this big UFO story in the news this week, even bigger than Comet Ison. Maybe a few of you noticed this. It took place in Abu Dhabi. Police officers, I'm going to go ahead and just read this nut graph on this article. Follow me here. Police officers had sealed off the courtyard where the object had been found. "I thought aliens invaded the world," said Emirati Mohammed El Rothmahi, age 11. "I was scared for a minute." Ishita Batra, age 11, a grade 6 pupil, said, "When I walked in, there was a police car and the lights were blinking. Lots of kids were saying," you know, I love this, because every single one of the articles that has dealt with this story has framed it in the exact same way. There's a slow build. Something happened on the schoolyard that day. Children gathered around as a strange object was being covered. Police were on hand and teachers were... And they act as though they're reporting actual news.
It's a real textbook.
And then later down the page, we start seeing... I love this. "Unknown to the children, aliens had not landed. The spaceship was part of an elaborate creative writing exercise at Al-Musharif School."
Just more slave training exercises. Be afraid, but it's just a prank.
Well, this is what's funny is that they cook this thing up and they talk about the fact that the principal of the school takes credit for having designed this craft that they actually use. He built this thing, and he cooked up the idea. The problem is that he wasn't the only person who's done this. Earlier this year, the exact same thing was done in the UK. Going all the way back to 2009 or earlier, I think that there was a organization called Creativity, something like that. There,
yeah, we reported on it this year. It was in the UK.
We talked about it. Yeah, this has happened over and over and over and over again. Since when was it a good idea? Now, granted, and I'll be the first to admit that when I was in grade school, I would have loved if my teachers had canceled all the classes for that day and had us go out there and take notes about an alleged crashed flying saucer. But the thing is it's really strange for a couple of reasons. Because, one, this is done over and over and over again. We've seen it happen a couple of times in the UK, but now they're doing it in Abu Dhabi. Where else? It's probably been done in the United States just as well. I wonder sometimes about some of the younger students and their potential misunderstanding of what is transpiring as being a possible real event. And it's a weird thing, because not only are these questions about how certain children at certain ages might interpret what they perceive as being a real phenomenon.
This is what I like to call the squirrel on water skis phenomenon, because to me it just seems when they don't have anything better to report.
Yeah, then they report on this. And that's the second point I was going to make, is that it seems to benefit the media more than it benefits these school children, because the thing is that they're supposedly learning something from this creative writing progress or project, when in truth, every time this happens, the media, the newspapers, it's like it's a template of a pre-written story, and they all go onto the same FTP server and download it, and they fill in the names, and it's the same article being written and rewritten and rewritten, yeah, and rewritten and rewritten again.
They don't have to do work.
Something happened today, and the children gathered around. Principals shooed them back away from the site of the apparent crash. Officials were on hand to direct people around the object while children asked, "Can we open it? Are there aliens inside?" And what's hilarious is in this story, one of the teachers actually says that he was gathering the children together and asks, "All right, I want to make sure no one's been abducted. Are you here? Is anyone missing?" So they're already trying to make these children believe that someone could have been abducted by aliens.
"Put your hands up. Let me see your RFID chip."
Yeah.
And as the children stood around the steaming VW bug in the mound of dirt with methamphetamine spewing from each end.
Yeah, I mean,
high times.
It is.
You know, we had similar scenes when I was in grade school, but we were all huddled around lowering the body of our recently deceased pet guinea pig.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's like something at a pet cemetery.
I mean, given the presentation, you would imagine that some of these kids are getting the crap scared.
Yeah,
out of them.
That's exactly what I'm imagining. I think that some of these kids were terrified by what was happening. I think that the media, I mean, it's a non-story that just, it's filler for them, because every time a news agency covers this, they write the exact same thing. It's absurd. It's silly. It's stupid. It's pointless.
I want to hear from the teachers that have to change all the drawls.
Yeah, exactly. That's diapers for those of you who aren't from the South, by the way. But, you know, it's a funny thing to me, because I keep seeing this story. We're going to continue to see this story, no doubt. I mean, we're never going to be able to get away from it, because apparently these educators aren't going to be able to think of anything better to do. Now, I mean, I think in order to be fair, we can examine the cons, and I think that it's pretty clear that, you know, I'm you know, gravitating toward the cons here in this one. I think it's kind of silly. I think the whole thing's silly. More so than the actual activity, the media's coverage of it every time being the exact same pre-written article is absurd. But is there actually merit to this sort of a quote-unquote creative writing exercise?
Yeah, but this topic's been played out. We need one where, you know, masked intruder enters school and starts lobbing smoke grenades here and there, and then at the end he just says, just kidding,
no,
have some Smarties.
That's in poor taste. That's in poor taste. No, not really poor taste, but I mean, the thing is that we see that so much. Look at what happened at Yale yesterday. Did you see that?
It does pose a question, though.
Well, nothing happened, but I'll tell you about that in a minute.
Think about this. You know, every school has tornado drills, whether you're in a region where tornadoes happen or not. All kinds of places have earthquake drills where you go, like, stand in the hallway and huddle down. I would not be surprised if we didn't start seeing in public schools, like, terrorism drills, if they don't already have crap.
No, they
like
do.
That.
No,
they
have them.
I've been terrorism drills or some sort of just, like, you know, anybody with a gun, you know, the Adam Lanza kind of scenario, you know. Have they already implemented stuff like that? Like, just like a random incident of terror?
Yeah, well, when I was up at a university, they actually had to close campus because a actual gunman had killed, like, an ex-girlfriend or something, and he was a student, so they thought that he might go to campus. But it was basically, actually, I was leaving right when it happened, so I was in my car, but they had, like, a big siren thing. It's pretty outrageous. And then your phone, you look at it, students, warning, bunker down while you can because we have reports, blah blah blah.
Well, I noticed something
it's
that
different,
was kind
though, because I was in college, you know. It's
kind of
like
on the same
5-year-olds,
kind of on the same vein as that. I don't know if anybody else was woken up today at 5 o'clock in the morning due to an emergency weather alert that pops up on your iPhone. Did you get this?
I did
My
not.
My wife did. I told her that's why I turned it off.
Yeah, it turned on at like 5 o'clock saying like this big ice storm warning, and it continually is like buzzing. But I tried to click on the alert, and it didn't send me to any sort of alert system web page or anything like that. It was just this random general ice storm alert. That
just
I thought
an
was
alert for the sake of being an alert, right?
Kind of bizarre. So
that's funny. Well, coming around to those operational drills, I think we might call them. One notable instance had been that there was a they didn't do this with children in school. Let me be clear. There had been an instance where there was a, I think it was like a teacher work day. And in a test of the response to danger, a group of teachers who had been in this room, I think what they had was they had a gunman run in with a gun and act like he was there, you know, to shoot the place up. And what ended up happening was it was allegedly a test to see how these teachers would respond to the apparent presence of a gunman. Now, I think that that's both, you know, a smart thing to do because it's this kind of make sure you're listening, make sure you're watching type thing. You know, let's see how you actually.
But it's also a good way to get somebody shot.
What if, well, this is the thing, and this
depending
is
depending on if the teacher just carries a gun.
One instance where there had been an attempt at a school shooting a number of years ago had involved a student who I think was just a teenager. He had shown up at a school with a gun and had walked into the building and was prepared to you know open rounds on students. The assistant principal had seen the young man as he was entering the building and walked to his car where he had kept a firearm himself. He kept a handgun in the glove box. He brought the weapon inside, walked up behind the young man, and I have to say, I mean, he's pretty brave to do this because here's this young man who's armed with a gun. He walks up behind him and holds the gun at his head and announces, I've got a gun on you, and you're going to be shot if you move. And the kid drops the gun, and he prevented the school shooting by having a gun himself. Now, what's interesting is I'm not trying to make a gun control argument here or the lack thereof. What I'm talking about, though, is the fact that if you had, in this instance, been in a room of teachers on a work day and one of them had been carrying a concealed carry permit weapon and this phony gunman comes in unannounced, I mean, what if this guy had gotten shot? What if somebody had decided to play the hero anyway and throw a chair at him? Someone could have been injured. It's probably wise to tell people when it's a drill and let them know that it's a drill. It's a very strange thing. And so, I mean, that's a little different from telling kids that aliens have crash landed on the playground, but I mean, it's in a sense the same sort of thing too, in the sense that well, let's just do it and see how people react to it. And that makes me think how much of this is actually aimed at exercises or operations or sure. programs and things. Or how much of it is actually aimed at trying to test and measure essentially people's response to certain things. It's a funny thing to me that time and time again, this quote-unquote creative writing exercise happens. The media always reports about it the exact same way. It's just like it just plays over and over and over and over again like a broken record. What else can we learn from that? What else is going on there? We never see anyone that says, you know, what's interesting is that in this instance, in London, in East Surrey when this happened, 4 out of, you know, roughly every 10 children actually thought that these were aliens and that this has actually happened. No, it's always this non-story. I'd be interested in knowing how the children actually responded to it, or did they all think it was just bogus? Were they told ahead of time, when you come to school tomorrow, we're going to be doing a special activity? Or did they just arrive, and was it announced when they got to school what was going on? I mean, see, these questions aren't answered.
Because yeah, you know this thing doesn't crash. It's like they go out and put it on the field, put a tarp on it all day.
Yeah, because I understand from what we can glean from the horrible journalism that's going on in every one of these stories when it's reported, you know, the kids get to school. The crash, what it is the kids arrive and the teachers are already there. They've put up yellow tape. They've got a guy in like a radioactive suit, you know, walking around and shooing people away from it. And the children, as they're arriving at school, are apparently led to believe that there's an actual event or something that's happened. But what if you're one of the parents and you're seeing yellow tape and what appears to be a crash and a person in a radiation suit and you're dropping your kids off in front of the school? Are you going to let your kid out of the car? No, you're going to keep on going. You're going to say, we're going to McDonald's. Da, 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 da.
Oh, my God. It's... Let's have these wild drills. Meanwhile, in places like L.A., school teachers recently sentenced for spoon-feeding semen to blindfolded pupils.
What?
Yeah, for real. That story really disturbed me when I heard about it. And putting cockroaches on their bodies.
Yeah, I read that story
as well. I'm glad I didn't read that story.
You know, but prepare for the gunman coming in. Meanwhile, the sex pervert sitting here salaming kids, you know?
Okay, that's enough. I've heard enough, Tyler. You've grossed us all out.
I've heard enough.
Yeah, whichever one of your alternate personalities is talking through the microphone right now.
This is Sybil.
Yeah.
I mean, it is everywhere, though. And, I mean, there's creepy people and criminals everywhere. We were just reading right before the show that the lead singer of the band Lost Prophets has been charged with multiple accounts of child molestation and attempted rape of an 11-month-old baby.
God almighty. What? Why? You know, okay, let me make it a...
Don't ask me.
This is a guy, this is a rock singer, of course, and a rock band. This person could have gotten with anyone he obviously tried to get with anyone that he wanted to. You know, obviously there's a psychological issue going on there, though.
If there were not some sort of childhood horrible events that happened to him, some sort of, you know, if he was molested as a child or something like that, I would be really surprised if there was, you know, grew up in a happy home, nothing wrong with the
guy.
You
never know. You never know, though. God, I tell you.
I haven't read the story yet. I mean, it sounds horrific.
No, it is. There's no way around that. Anything like that is horrific, you know. But I'll tell you this. It's the sad reality of the world we live in, and I'll tell you this, too. In this day and age, I don't think that there has to be any excuse or explanation for that matter for strange. You're going to encounter it no matter what, no matter where you go, no matter what you do. So you might as well deal with it or prepare for it, which is, I guess, why we're so thankful that we've got these emergency preparedness response teams that are conditioning us for something. God knows what. But, you know, the question is that if we were to assert that there were actual conditioning going on, it's interesting that and in so many instances, these kids, whatever they're being conditioned for involves a mock-up of a crash landing of a flying saucer. Funny, huh? That's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the program. And on behalf of all of us here at Graylian International, including Tyler Pittman, Caleb Hanks, Matthew Oakley, John Anderson, Dick Oakley, and yours truly, Micah Hanks, the mouth of the South, we bid you adieu. And until next time, as always, my friends, stay strange. Talk to you again soon, and happy Thanksgiving.
Listening to the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. Any rebroadcast or duplication of this program or program content without express written permission is strictly prohibited. The Graylian Report. in direct cooperation with the internet website, GraylianReport.com.